This podcast is presented by Celery Digital. Thanks for listening.
I think I was about six Heinekens deep. I was trying to figure out GoDaddy, and so I finally broke down and I called him from a crappy Afghan cell phone. I said, Lee, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning in LA, and he actually picks up the phone. Hey man, we're gonna make flip-flops in Afghanistan. Register the domain name, Combat Flip-Flops. Are you serious? Yeah, I'm serious. Do it now.
Welcome to Celery Talks. This is a show that features ideas and the stories that are behind them. And I'm your host, Tad Kelsey. Celery Talks will tell the stories of business ideas and the people that made them happen. Matt Griffin and Donald Lee served our country together as Army Rangers in Afghanistan. The two passed time at outposts, on patrols, and in armored personnel carriers spitballing about the startups they could launch after their military service. The seed that took root would come in the form of a makeshift flip-flop from the sole of a combat boot. Their company, Combat Flip-Flops, started by selling their uncommon flip-flops and later added clothes, shoes, and other accessories. Their mission is to help communities and cultures that have been devastated by war. Their approach is business over bullets, and their army of customers is called the Unarmed Forces. I want to begin by asking for those that are not aware of Combat Flip-Flops to tell us about your product and what you guys do.
So we're Combat Flip-Flops, and we're kind of like a grassroots movement. We get a community of people, which we call the Unarmed Forces, to buy cool products, which we make, combat flip-flops, which are flip-flops and jewelry and t-shirts and hats and bags and everything else. We manufacture those products in war zones, so we create economic opportunity where there wasn't one before. And then we fight radicalism and ignorance just by creating jobs, promoting security, and we use our profits to put little girls to school in Afghanistan. So all good things all the way around. And it's really driven by our customers and our community.
Okay, so let's go back to the beginning for you, Griff and Lee. Where are you guys from? Where'd you grow up at?
So, Lee, I grew up in Los Angeles. Lived here my whole life. Only time I ever lived away from LA was after I enlisted in the military. As soon as I was done, I came right back.
And then I'm from Iowa originally. I went to college in New York. Got into the military in 2001. And then September 11th happened, and I met Lee in the team room at 2nd Ranger Battalion in 2003.
So what did L.A. and Iowa contribute to who you guys are now?
I think L.A., for me, L.A. just, it helped direct me towards the internet industry. I'm a designer by education, but by, on the job experience, I went into the marketing, into the marketing field. It was kind of like a natural progression given, where I was working and what I was doing. I was doing work in the internet industry and, I just things kept evolving for me. My role in the companies that I worked for just kept evolving. And I think being in LA, it kind of pushed me towards where I am now. I don't know if that really makes sense, but once, if you live here, you're kind of immersed in this crazy culture. I think that's what it did for me.
From Iowa, all you know is just hard work. And that's just it. You just get up, you work hard, you go to bed, you repeat. And so I think that's what Iowa contributed to the company and to the mission.
What led you guys into the military?
9/11. I enlisted the day the recruiting offices opened. There was I think it was like a few days or a week the recruiting offices closed after 9/11. The day they opened, I went in and signed up with an option 40, a Ranger contract. I want to be an Army Ranger and go fight for my country.
Yeah, I'm fourth generation military, so it was kind of a common thing. I wanted to get out of the house when I was 18, so as soon as I graduated high school, I left. I went to the United States Military Academy, graduated in 2001, so I was committed for 5 years at that point. But when September 11th happened, I was pretty committed to special operations and going downrange with those guys.
Before you guys deployed, and you would go on to be so deeply marked by Afghanistan and Iraq and your experiences and the people you went on to fight for and interact with. And what did you know of the region? How did you view the region before you would go and interact with its culture?
Up until you deploy, you only know what you see on CNN and what other people tell you. I mean, CNN, Fox, whatever you see on TV. When you get there, when you finally get into Afghanistan, I think the thing that affected me the most was as soon as you step off the airplane, the magnitude of the mountains around you, just the sheer size of everything around you. That was pretty nutty. I just remember looking up and saying, "Oh crap!" I said to myself, "I bet you I'm going to have to walk those mountains." and sure enough, it happened.
And you come from a place with, you know, some decent sized mountains.
Yeah. I mean, we have, you know, our local mountains. I think they hit like 9,000 feet elevation, like Big Bear and stuff like that in Southern California. But quite honestly, you step off that airplane and see those mountains for the first time. It's very impressive. You know, you step out, you get a whiff of fire because everything there is being burned, and you just see the mountains are huge.
Yeah, I second his comments. You read all the history books, a little bit of, you know, military history and education there, and you hear about the terrain dictating the battle. So you look a lot into that, and I look at maps before we went. Additionally, I read the translated Quran, you know, because right now we say, hey, we're fighting Islamic fundamentalists, and might as well know what they're reading to understand what their religion is. So just really taking a look at that, and that's just basically all I knew, is just what I could read from the American version of the history in Afghanistan and the translated Quran. And then when you get there, I think, you know, what Lee said is, the magnitude of it is huge, but also as soon as we rolled out of the front gate, the magnitude of the poverty is what really hit me. And I thought I'd seen poverty in my life before, but people can't imagine how bad it is in some of those regions in Afghanistan.
Before enlisting, what did you see yourselves doing for a living?
I honestly thought I was going to just start an internet company, some kind of internet company. I had a lot of entertainment sites that I had started building in the late 90s. But honestly, everything really changed in 2001. Growing up, being really young, I was always intrigued by the military. You know, my dad had, you know, some of his good friends were special forces weapons sergeants, stuff like that. And, you know, I loved it. I wanted to do it, but as I got older and I went to school, it didn't seem like it was going to happen, just the career path that I chose. But 9/11, it was, I don't want to call it a reason or an excuse, because, you know, I guess dudes like me that did it for 9/11, it was more of a calling. Mm-hmm. That was, I made the decision to drop everything. Yes, it was six-figure salary, all that stuff, just dropped it and left. Married my high school sweetheart, and I shipped out. I married her December 16th of 01. I shipped January 8th of 02.
Yeah, I just wanted to be an airborne ranger. I just wanted to jump out of planes and do the Army thing. That was it. That's all I wanted to do.
Have you guys always been entrepreneurial?
Yeah, I could honestly say yeah, and I could answer that for Griff, because the amount of stupid ideas that we had while we were sitting in our team room, like, when we get out, we're going to insert stupid idea. You know, the one that we remember the most is probably the last one before we started Combat Flip Flops, and it was, the idea was Cafe Racer Coffee. We were going to have a coffee delivery service attached to, like, Cafe Racer motorcycles and drive to people's businesses and brew coffee. And I think Combat Flip Flops was a safer route. I don't know about all that, man. But that was, I could honestly say both of us, we had that in us.
Yeah, I like to read. And I just like to read books, and whether it's about business or it's about, you know, warfare or leadership or whatever it was. And the books that I always resonated with were the ones that were written by entrepreneurs. I just seemed that their vibe was more along the lines of what I liked, and their mentality of just get it done. If there isn't a path, blaze one. That really just resonated with me. And over time, I got tired of working for other people, and entrepreneurship just really seemed like a good fit. So it's working 80 hours for yourself, so that way you don't have to work 40 hours for somebody else.
Hearing you guys talk and hearing you in other interviews and stories, you guys just seem like you have a really good connection. I mean, I guess that's what going to war with somebody does to you, but why did you two want to go into business together specifically?
You know, if a company starts and it's one dude that starts a company, like one guy that, you know, one great entrepreneur can start a company and run it and do really well, right? But I think some of the better ideas and some of the better companies are started by a couple, two, three guys that are good in their specific area. You know, they have their lanes that they're good at. It brings great balance to a company. You know, we do have a great connection. Griff and I have been together through life, death, birth, you know, war. We've been together, I'd have to say, the most important parts of our lives. But I think being through all that, it gives us the ability to be brutally, brutally honest with each other. I think that's what the Rangers did for us. I mean, you know, a lot of the conversations we have are very straightforward. And if an outsider hears them, they think we were about to stab each other in the face. But it is what it is. We can be blunt with each other and we just carry on. But I guess to answer your question, like, I think we did it just because it made sense out of necessity. Maybe necessity? What do you think, Griff?
Yeah, I mean, I think just the more you work with people, you get older and work in business environments, you really just want to be surrounded by people that you can depend on. And you know, I know I can depend on Lee, even though some days I just want to punch him in his face. I know that I can still depend on him to get the job done. Like right now, I really want to punch Lee right now.
I'm sick, bro. Today is the first day I'm semi-vertical. I'm sick.
I'm not afraid of beating up an infirmed person, especially you.
So from the time that you guys left the military to the beginning, to that aha moment, how long was that?
Lee got out in 2005. I got out in 2006. I called him with the idea in 2009. And then my brother-in-law, Andy, came into the business. And so he's the third co-founder, the third peg on the stool. And we launched the business in January 2012 after really working diligently on it all through 2011.
Griff, tell me about the aha moment.
Just standing in a factory in Kabul, Afghanistan, watching 300 people work, providing for their families. And I was really inspired by it. And I think a lot of service members get out and they have no idea what they did or the impact they made because they sat behind a wall, they went out on a mission, and they went back behind the wall, and then they flew home. So they never got to really see the positive impacts in the community. And standing in this factory, I was actually witnessing the positive impacts that U.S. and coalition forces had to create that opportunity. And I asked the factory manager what was going to happen when the war ends, and without skipping a beat, he simply replied, "Yeah, we're going to shut this place down. Everybody's going to go out of work. Nobody's going to want to buy anything in Afghanistan." And I went from inspiration to rage. And in that moment of rage, I looked down on a table and there's a combat boot sole with a flip-flop thong punched through it. And I thought it was cool and I thought we could use it to keep those people employed. And that's how it started. That was the aha moment.
Tell me about that first conversation you had with Lee about combat flip-flops.
I think it was about six Heinekens deep. I was trying to figure out GoDaddy, and so I finally broke down and I called him from a crappy Afghan cell phone. I said, "Lee." And it's 2 o'clock in the morning in LA, and he actually picks up the phone. "Hey man, we're gonna make flip-flops in Afghanistan. Register the domain name Combat Flip-Flops. Are you serious?" "Yeah, I'm serious. Do it now." And he did it, and that was it. That's how it started.
And it sat right next to the domain name Cafe Racer Coffee for a little while before something actually happened.
It's still got legs, Lee. It's still got legs.
Lee, when did you know that you had to be a part of this? Was it an immediate yes?
"He's my brother. I'm in. Count me in." "Let's do this. Count me in. I mean, count me in. We got this. Let's do it."
Okay, so then when did you go to manufacturers?
We actually, nobody would give us money to start this business, and we weren't really well off to start. So we just sold all of our toys to manufacture our prototypes through one of Lee's contacts in L.A. He worked for a shoe company when he got out, and they made some prototypes for us, which was enough for us to go seed them into the market with bloggers. And our intent was to take pre-orders, use that cash from pre-orders to manufacture. The response was overwhelming. We had a few thousand orders on deck, and then we went to our manufacturer in Afghanistan. We placed the order, and then their factory had the government contract pulled, and they immediately went under. So that was awesome. They were supposed to deliver in June of 2012, which then turned into July, which then turned into August. And so then in September, my brother Andy and I bought a whole bunch of duffel bags at a local military surplus store. And we flew to Kabul to go get our footwear. And the factory had gone under. They manufactured one run beautifully out of horrible materials. And so it was 100% reject rate. Gave all those footwear away, told all of our customers what happened. They were cool with it. Found another factory, ordered more materials. That factory went under. And then we eventually ended up making our first 4,000 pair in my garage in Issaquah, Washington. So that was our first manufacturing challenge and debacle.
Lee, did you then become a citizen of Issaquah, Washington?
You know what? When we had that big debacle with manufacturing, one of the last attempts we made to manufacture in Afghanistan, we got really bad news, and we decided to ship our raw materials to Seattle. And when we made the decision to manufacture in-house, I'd get up there every month, once a month. I was getting up there and trying to throw in. But, my lane and my role in the company was more the digital marketing side and the acquisition piece. So, I kicked in where I could. But I think one thing that Andy, Griff, and I are very conscious of is staying in our lanes and not crossing the lanes and creating chaos.
From a consumer perspective, when did you guys know people wanted what you guys had to offer?
we knew as soon as Griff hit the floor with the prototypes and started taking pre-orders. I mean, when you get, you know, like 4,000 pre-orders on this is what they're kind of going to look like. You know, you get the orders, there's a demand there, right? And one thing that we understand as a business and entrepreneurs is that every business or every idea has three requirements. You know, it's the idea, it's the demand, and the last one is the ability to execute. And up until we made the decision to ship the raw materials stateside, we had two of those three boxes checked. We had the idea and we had the demand. So as soon as we got them here, we executed. But when you talk about the demand and when we realized people wanted them, it was then when Griff and Andy hit the floor and pre-sold a bunch of pairs. That's when we knew.
What event led to the largest growth for the company?
Shark Tank.
Yeah, Shark Tank.
It was interesting, though. I think if you want to talk about the pebble in the pond and the ripple effect, what really led to that was an article that Gizmodo did on us. Wes Seiler wrote an article on us. It was very interesting because, you know, Griff flew down to LA and we had meeting after meeting after meeting before Griff flew back. And I'm like, dude, do we got to take this last meeting? Like, let's go home. Like, let me go sit on my couch and relax and have a beer. And he's like, no, come on, let's go. And it was with Wes. I think Wes had probably written the best article that's ever been written on us. And it was published on Gizmodo. And that led to one of the executive producers of Shark Tank finding us. But while when Wes's article dropped, we were actually on the e-commerce platform that our site was built on. It crashed us for like 3 days or something like that because we weren't using Shopify at the time. And and what we were using was, it was relying on, you know, basically whatever server that I bought at the server company. So yeah, it was an interesting series of events from the time he wrote that article until now.
So Shark Tank reached out to you guys. You didn't pursue Shark Tank.
Yeah. Griff thought they were somebody who was drunk dialing him from LA.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty funny. They called and left a message and says, my name's Max Swedlow. I'm a producer for Shark Tank. I want to have you on the show. So I quick IMDb'd him, and it was true. It was him. And then I called it back, and he answered. And I thought, you know, Shark Tank was kind of like American Idol, where they they kind of destroy small businesses before they get their legs underneath them. So I called Lee, and I said, man, I don't think we should do it. And he replies, are you high? What are you thinking? Let's do this. This makes companies. And then we just got after it, and the rest is history.
How has Shark Tank impacted the company?
It broke everything. You know, you can say that I think we did it as well as any company could do. We didn't have any website crashes. Everything was ready to go. Our customer service was ready. We did our best to get production ready for it. We executed pretty well, but it finds all the flaws. If you got a hole in your boat, it's going to find it quickly, and you're going to be bilging water. So we essentially had to rebuild our business over the last year while fulfilling a bunch of orders out of my garage behind my house.
What countries are your products being manufactured in right now?
Right now is Colombia, as we make all of our footwear there. We make some jewelry and textiles in Afghanistan, landmine jewelry in Laos. We make some bags, hats, and t-shirts here in the U.S., and then we're constantly searching for new conflict areas to make products that American consumers want.
Let me go back to your appearance on Shark Tank. One of the sharks bowed out because he said, you know, I love the cause, but I don't know about the sustainability financially as a business. And I just thought, you know, I'm sure they hear that a lot. Like people, at least from those in the business world, the impact you guys are making is undeniably powerful and impactful. But what do you say to those detractors in the business world that they think the cause is great, but this isn't sustainable because of the associated logistical challenges?
That's fine. But like, it really doesn't matter. A lot of people, they bow out by making assumptions and not willing to do the work. And we're willing to do the work. And there's a lot of motivated people between Afghanistan and the United States that are willing to make that happen. And they do. And if they're not willing to step up and explore the viability of the business, then that's on them. We'll just continue moving forward. That doesn't bother us at all.
Use Vietnam as an example. Look what happened after the Vietnam War. What are they manufacturing now? They're manufacturing Nike. They're manufacturing. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at them. What was the math on that, Griff? It took 30 years for them to get for Vietnam to recover and start manufacturing at the scale that they're manufacturing now. Was it 30 years?
Yeah, I think they're battling for the number two footwear producer on the planet right now.
Yeah. So, you know, if you see what happens after a war, why not speed it up? Why not bring the jobs and bring the revenue stream into those countries sooner? I mean, that's how you get that. That's how you get it. You right all the wrong that's done after, you know, after a war and when nobody has jobs and everybody's sucking for cash. That's how you right everything. So why not fast track that? But a lot of people are scared to go there. We had, you know, when we try to get insurance on our runs, like Griff, you know, you could talk about that. Like, they wouldn't do it.
They don't insure your runs. That's it. Like, there's exemptions from insurance where we manufacture our products. And it's just like, this is, we're not going to insure your stuff. And we just have to, you know, we take the risk. And what Hemingway said, the only risk you have, or the only value you have in life are the risks you're willing to take. And we're just really transparent with our consumers. And we say, hey, this is the nature of our business. Your stuff, you know, might get lost. It might not make it, but we always tend to deliver. So if you trust us, we'll make it happen. And they do. And that's just the way it works.
What specific challenges have you faced in Laos, Afghanistan, and Colombia?
Yeah, I think Laos, we haven't had any issues. The production there is really, to be honest, it's chill. And it's hard to believe that we dropped a quarter million or quarter billion bombs on a country that was described as their population is so laid back, they almost fall over. We haven't had any production issues in Laos. In Colombia, our biggest thing is soccer matches and tulip season. So soccer matches tend to shut the town down, so it's tough to get stuff out. And then there's certain times of the year when tulips are in season. So actually finding a spot on an airplane to get our footwear delivered to the U.S. is challenging. In Afghanistan, we've had everything from border closures to shipping change raids to shutdowns of airports to bombings and all those other things. But typically when we just reply to our customers and say, hey, I know you're waiting on this footwear, but a large bomb went off that shut down our shipping route. Like, we understand you're upset about your flip-flops, but there are some other people that are having a little bit bigger challenges right now. Let's just have a little empathy and compassion, and we'll get your products to you, we promise. And our customers are, again, really mindful, they're compassionate about it, and they're willing to wait.
Have you guys felt or made financial sacrifices as a company to make that impact that you guys feel so compelled to make?
Yeah, I mean, I've got six figures, almost multiples, six figures into the business myself. I mean, I was an exec for a defense firm before I left. You know, we've all had to sacrifice, you know, vacations with families, time away, paychecks. You know, we make less money than we ever did right now. As business owners, but that's just what you got to do as a business owner. And a lot of cooking at home, you know, not a lot of going out to eat, not a lot of movies. You just got Netflix and what you can cook in your kitchen. But I mean, that's every standard small business hustle for everybody who wants to grow their business.
What's happened that you didn't expect to happen along the way?
I think for me, from a marketing perspective, what we've seen, the responses to our advertising, or the response we've had to our ads on Facebook as an example, we've seen the left and the right come together and find a middle ground with us. We've seen tree huggers and, you know, special operations hitters meet in the middle and say, we get it. You know, you'll get, once in a while, you get this troll coming out of the woodwork saying, why are you supporting these guys? F them. They, you know, they're terrorists. And you'll see, you know, and this could be some random veteran, but, you know, another veteran and a tree hugger will the community self-regulating. It's very interesting to see when you see the left and the right come together and find a cause and that they can both agree on. I think that for us, that's the most interesting thing that's come out of it. I mean, from a marketing perspective.
I just love the discussion because what they say, 80% of people don't read past headlines. And so we put some pretty controversial headlines out there and people will make some really bold comments on it just because of the way that Facebook fed them the boost or the post or whatever it was. And they'll just make some crass, ignorant comment on there. And we don't even have to say anything. Our customers use that as a use that as an excuse to beat down on a troll. And it's so much fun to watch. And we love it when it happens.
Yeah, watching your TED Talk and seeing like the 8 thumbs down. I'm like, who gave a thumbs down to this?
I love it.
If you haven't heard Griff's TED Talk, Did You Know, on what's going on in Afghanistan, it is really powerful. So go check it out. It's worth the 10 minutes and 36 seconds. What are you guys seeing in Afghanistan as a result of all the girls, the women that are being educated because of combat flip-flops?
If you just go to Aid Afghanistan for Education on Facebook, you get to see some of the individual stories that they write about the positive impact it has for women. And what a lot of Americans don't realize is that women were not educated there from essentially 81 to 2001. So you have an age gap of a 5-year-old girl to a 50-year-old woman that still can't read. So it's really interesting to see the older women who are able to go back to school and get their education and to be able to start conserving other families as an older, more maternal example to their families. And I really enjoy seeing those examples of the older women leading by example in Afghanistan, going back and getting their education and then going back into their communities. And, you know, Lee and I have both seen it. A lot of veterans have seen it. The Afghans are tough. They are just tough human beings. But the only thing tougher than an Afghan man is an Afghan woman. You know, what they have to endure to succeed in their country is unbelievable. So to empower those women to go out and make positive differences in their community, I don't think there's anything more we could be doing with our lives.
How did you guys meet Hasina Shirjan?
Man, I think it was just on the internet. You know, thank God for Al Gore and his internet, right? Because we can, if somebody pops up anywhere, you can essentially track them down within a few button clicks. And as much as you would like to think that people all over the world would be supporting a super powerhouse of a woman who's employing women and educating women in Afghanistan, they're not, right? And so there's, her inbox is overwhelming with people compassionate to her cause. And so I just emailed her, and a few hours later, she emailed me back and I said, I like what you're doing. You know, can we work together? Can you make us some products? Can we support your schools? And the answer was yes. And we've just built a relationship over the past 4 years that we're really proud of.
Where do you guys hope to see Combat Flip-Flops in 5 to 10 years?
In everybody's house. In everybody's house and on everybody's feet.
Yeah.
Think about that. I mean, that would be an amazing story if that happened. The amount of people that we would be able to help.
I'm going to run the quick math on that.
So this is another thing about it. If we say something like that, math ends up getting broken down. And we figure out how many years of schooling and things like that are going to get funded.
If every American bought combat flip-flops, we would put 1.8 million Afghan girls in school. Just think about that. And it doesn't cost us anything more. Like, think about how much you spend. You know, a third of your taxes, one third of your taxes go toward the DOD and overseas contingency operations. That's thousands of dollars a year. And if you were to just say buy 50 bucks worth of flip-flops in everybody's house, and then we put all those girls in school for a year, think about what the positive impact would be in Afghanistan, in their country, international relationships, and how that would just absolutely destroy radicals because women are being educated and their kids aren't falling victim to those groups. We wouldn't have to send our soldiers there anymore. We wouldn't have to repeat the same mistakes every 2 decades.
Yeah, talk about an impact on a culture. What other regions of the world are you guys looking at and wanting to get into?
Yeah, I would say a focus is follow one course until successful. I think if we can prove that our business model is viable in Afghanistan, we have the impact that we want. We've proved that we can do it in the graveyard of empires, the toughest environment in the world, and then we can go anywhere we want to after that. So we'll just focus there for right now.
What are you guys excited about right now?
I am really, 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 really excited. I'm trying to do my best Trump impression right now. Billions and billions. Now, about our giveaway. We say we never go poor by giving. We got a whole bunch of really awesome veteran companies who are chipping in. We have over $13,000 in prizes that we're giving away. We're giving away a drone, a war rug, a custom painting that was done by a Navy SEAL, was signed by Robert Duvall. I mean, you got all these just badass gifts that were given away, and all you got to do is just go to our webpage and sign up.
Well, guys, I appreciate you taking the time to join me. Powerful story. Keep doing what you're doing. I mean, you don't have to hear that from me or hear from me that you're making an impact. This is incredible. It's definitely motivated me just doing research on you guys and learning about you guys, and I will definitely champion what you guys are doing moving forward.
Well, thanks. They say the most powerful word in the world is ask. So I'm just going to ask all of your listeners, go to our website, combatflipflops.com. Join the unarmed forces by signing up for our email list and then all of our socials at Combat Flipflops. And the share button's free. Please hit that thing often. It's really meaningful.
Griff and Lee are also ardent about providing opportunities for military veterans. They have a partner factory in the U.S. that employs many veterans and produces bags and briefcases for Combat Flip-Flops. Further, half of Combat Flip-Flops are veterans and half of their investors are veterans as well. Griff's advice for military veterans trying to start a company upon return to civilian life is stop wanting and start doing. You can find their flip-flops, shoes, clothing, and other accessories on combatflipflops.com. There, you can also learn about the powerful impact Combat Flip-Flops is making in the U.S. and abroad. That's all for today's show. Thanks for joining us. Join us next episode as we talk to Aaron Rubin, the founder of an e-commerce software company called ShipHero. Subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. Also listen at CeleryDigital.com as well as Podomatic.com.